At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And we don't just mean the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So, why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out, the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
The NFL draft is now officially open.
Welcome to another episode of Draft Season. I am John Schmoke, joined by the one and only Tony Pauline from Sports Kita. Tony, good to see you, man. Unfortunately, we had to skip last week. I was sequestered in a hotel in Tempe getting ready for the Giants to take on the 49ers. And the time change, and I just, you know, short week, Thursday game, it was tough to get done. So now we got 2 weeks worth of games to talk about, Tony, which is always a good thing.
It is. I hope you had nicer weather in Tempe than we've been having here on the Northeast, because it's been cold and dreary and time to pull out the winter stuff if you're a runner like me.
Yeah, I got a call from the wife this morning. How do you turn on the furnace? Because she was freezing working from home. So, yeah, I know what you're saying. It all depends. Do you prefer like 60 and rain out east, or do you prefer the 105 and go outside and melt on the sidewalk, which is what it was in Arizona?
Yeah, but it's a dry heat, right? The humidity is not crazy.
It was fine. No, it was hot as hell, but it was good. Giants came home 1-1 from that trip. All right, as you guys know, this is a draft podcast. It is not a Giants podcast. So today we're going to get into Tony's top 10 at this point in the season in terms of where he's at. A lot of big-time school players in that list, and then we'll go over some of the big games this week and have that maybe changed some of our impressions of some of these players. And Tony, it should surprise no one, even for you, a guy who is generally not as high on quarterbacks on the hype train as other people are, that Caleb Williams is sitting at number one for you on your top 10.
You know, as you said, I'm very conservative about quarterbacks, and I like to take a step back when the hype machine is rolling. But when I saw Williams, you know, I saw a guy who is a dominant presence on the football field, a guy who can make mountains out of molehills, a guy who is tough, a guy who has got a great, terrific arm, very athletic, great presence on the field. He's got to improve his accuracy a bit. He's not inaccurate, but his pass placement has got to improve a little bit. And when I talk to people, they say the leadership and the personality that you see on the field translates off the field, that he is a different kind of player. Because I talk to a lot of people with my rankings about Drake May versus Celeb Williams, and they said not only is Celeb Williams a great leader on the field, he does it off the field, and teams are going to absolutely love him in the offseason. So this time I kind of bent the rules for myself. I went against the norm for myself. And Caleb Williams is at the top pretty significantly.
He just does magical things. Like, there are plays in every game where you just go, wow, did he just make that throw on the move, throwing across his body, placing it over somebody's head while he's falling out of bounds? You know, the ability to avoid the rush, Tony, off platform. He just does special things that 98% of quarterbacks are just physically incapable of doing.
And USC is not a good team. I mean, USC is it's Celeb Williams and everybody else. I mean, they're ranked what, number 5 in the nation or something like that. And it's singularly because of that guy. When you look at USC from a pro prospect point of view, I mean, they don't have a lot of talent there, and it's one guy carrying basically the whole team. Now, you know, a lot of things that he does on Saturday, it's going to be a little bit more difficult to do on Sunday. But still, I mean, everything I hear about him off the field, in the classroom, basically point to a guy that is your quote-unquote franchise quarterback.
Look, and the comp is Patrick Mahomes, and I understand how ridiculous that comp is. Patrick Mahomes could very well turn out to be the best quarterback in the history of the league, or at least, you know, if he keeps going along this trajectory, and I understand that's high praise, but that's just the way he plays. Everything is so fast and loose, Tony, but he does it with a purpose. You know what I mean? He kind of has found that balance between street ball and real football in a way that just works.
And the thing is, you know that opposing defenses are trying to game plan for him. They're trying to get him into situations where it's impossible for him, like they do with Patrick Mahomes, yet he just delivers. And like I said, he doesn't have great tools around. He doesn't have great skill players around him. He doesn't have an outstanding offensive line. He'll probably tell you differently, as we saw, remember last year during the Heisman Trophy, when he received the trophy, he brought his whole offensive line there. But that's part of the off-the-field leadership that people have been boasting about him, you know, things like that, bringing the his offensive lineman to the Heisman Trophy presentation last year when he won.
Yeah, USC takes on Colorado this week. We saw what Oregon was able to do against that Colorado defense. I imagine that Caleb Williams might have just as much luck. Instead of going 1-10 here, Tony, you actually have two other quarterbacks in your top 10. So let's hit the quarterbacks first, then we'll hit the rest of the guys, all right? So coming in at number 4 on your top 10, Drake May, quarterback, North Carolina. Not a surprise. This is seems to be the consensus number 2 quarterbacks on most people boards, and he is more of your traditional pocket passer than Williams.
Bigger guy, probably a stronger arm, very cognizant of what's happening on the field. He can pick up yardage with his legs when he needs to, but he's not a guy that you're going to design have a lot of design quarterback runs for. I like his awareness. I like his poise. It's sort of a situation this year at North Carolina, like Caleb Williams, that he doesn't have great weapons around him, especially with the NCAA mind-boggling, not giving Quintez Walker, the receiver, another year of eligibility, denying him that. But a guy who's a real leader, I mean, does a great job, you know, just carrying that offense and finding ways, I think, ways to get things done. You know, I think he's more of your, if it was 15, 20 years ago, you're probably looking at Drake May as the number one quarterback in this year's draft because you're looking at Caleb Williams as a smaller guy, sort of a helter-skelter, sandlight type of quarterback. And 15, 20 years ago, you wanted that more of that disciplined quarterback, but the game has changed a la Patrick Mahomes, which is why Williams is ahead of Drake May. A lot to like about Drake May. I don't know that if you run an RPO type of offense, you're going to want Drake May there, but he definitely has starting ability. I don't want to anoint him as a franchise quarterback at this point in time, but I think he has those traits.
You just mentioned size real quick. So Caleb Williams, 6'1", 215.
Yeah, now, I don't know about that. I mean, that's what he's listed at. I think he's going to be a little bit shorter and a little bit smaller come combine time.
Interesting. Did you think he's going to be sub 6 foot?
I think he'll probably be about 6 foot, 6 foot, a half inch. I know. I mean, he looks small on film. And I know people who've been around him and they've told me, yeah, he's maybe 6 foot tall.
See, this is why we have these conversations, Tony. Drake May, the listed is height and weight is 6'4", 229. So he's kind of that more traditional, old school NFL size. And you mentioned pocket passer, but he is a good athlete. It's not like he's, you know, sitting back there and he's a statue and he can't move. So he checks all the boxes in a normal year, Tony. For example, in last year's class, you would have Drake May ahead of Bryce Young?
It would be very close. If I had Bryce Young ahead of Drake May, it would. I mean, the thing about Bryce Young is I like the clairvoyant. I like the quarterbacks with the great intelligence, and that's what Bryce Young is. Obviously, May has the size advantage. He's got the arm strength advantage. He's got a lot of physical advantages. It depends on what you want. Do you want the guy that can mentally absorb and just see everything so incredibly well, which Drake May does, but Bryce Young is special at? Or do you want the more physical specimen? I probably would have had Drake May rated higher in January than Bryce Young. But I think as we went through the process, the more I found out about Bryce Young, when people were calling him a genius or referring to him as a genius, I probably would have flipped the two. There would have been a little, just a tiny bit of spread between them.
And Bryce Young has had a bit of a rough start here to his NFL career, but a lot of that's to do with what's going on around him than I think Bryce Young specifically. Quarterback situations do matter. And you do have another quarterback in your top 10, Tone, coming in at number 8, someone I think if we spoke a couple months ago, he would not have been there.
Yeah. Shedeur Sanders of Colorado. And listen, I was not a believer. You know, everybody had him rated early when, you know, coming off the year last year at Jackson State. I was like, you know, I'm just going to sit back and I'm going to watch. And this kid, this cat from the get-go has done nothing but impress me. It's not just the physical skills. It's the decision-making. It's the ability to see the field. Yes, I know they got pummeled by Oregon. Understandable. I mean, that was eventually going to happen. But you watch Sanders, whether it be the way that he continually responded against TCU, or whether it was that last drive against Colorado State when Colorado was down by 8, I think they were pinned inside their 5-yard line. He drove 95 yards down the field, and then they had to score the 2-point conversion, and then he wins the game in overtime. There's just so many things to like about Shedeur Sanders. He needs some work in certain areas of the game, but you know, he's not as big as Drake May. He's got the Drake May arm. He's got a terrific arm, and he's got that Caleb Williams mind. He's got it going on between the ears. Obviously, the bloodlines from his dad. I mean, there's just so much to like about this guy, and he has been so impressive, except for the bump in the road against Oregon last week. He has been so impressive, and, you know, it's one of those situations where I was like, I'll see it when I believe it, and in those first 3 games, Sanders made a believer out of me.
Now, he's listed 6'2", 216. Do you think he's going to come in smaller than that, too?
They always do. But still, I mean, if he's 6'1", 6'1 and a quarter, 212 pounds, so what? I mean, the way he moves around, the quickness, the arm strength. And again, it's not just the physical skills with Sanders. He's got it going on between the ears, which is super important, so important at the quarterback position.
He does hold the ball a little bit, Tone. He's taking some sacks. That's the only thing that I've really seen that I have, like, maybe I would be concerned a little bit about that. But you're right. He's been impressive.
And again, you know, let's go back to what we said about, you know, Caleb Williams. He doesn't have great, I mean, he's got some plays, Travis Hunter, until Travis Hunter got hurt, but he doesn't have great, great skill players. They play great team ball. There's no doubt about it. But I mean, there's not a lot of, you're not looking at a lot of those guys right now. You could be as, you know, very early draft picks in the NFL. That may happen over the course of the next year or so.
You know, Tony, real quick, I know this is kind of off topic, but you mentioned Hunter. We haven't talked about him yet on this show. For the fans that don't know, he's a two-way player that's basically, until he got hurt, I guess that was 2 weeks ago now, was playing basically a full game on offense and defense. He's not draft eligible yet. He's just a sophomore. But do you see him long-term as a wide receiver or as a corner? How do you view him?
I got to watch more of him, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Until these guys, you know, I watch the games on television. When I'm watching Travis Hunter, I will really break it down over the summer. Because, as you said, he's not draft eligible. So there's so many of the other draft eligible guys. He's an exciting guy. He's an athletic guy. You know, I mean, the priority always used to be the shutdown corner over the receiver. Now the game has changed. And I think, you know, it's basically TBD, to be determined, as far as Travis Hunter's concerned.
All right, real quick. Do you have any other quarterbacks that are close to a top 10 for you, or are those 3 kind of standing apart from the rest?
No, Quinn Ewers is sort of in the middle of round 1 for me. I do like Quinn Ewers a lot. You know, you talked about Sanders holding the ball a little bit too long. I think with Ewers, the one thing that concerns me about Ewers, who is number 12 on my board when I look at my
overall, he is close
right now, is that he kind of takes a while to get to make his decision. But I mean, he is your prototypical vertical passer, gunslinger. We talked about it on the last show with the Texas Alabama game. Yeah, he's your, you know, he's a prototypical pocket passer in the NFL that, you know, will just throw the ball down the field. A lot to like about his game. I'd like to see him pull the trigger a little bit quicker mentally.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. All right. Next 2 guys on your list at 2 and 3, Tony, I'll pack him into a package here because I think we talked about both a bunch already on the show. 2 skill position guys, not surprisingly, Marvin Harrison Jr. out of Ohio State and Brock Bowers out of Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, Harrison is all he's cracked up to be. He meets the hype. And, you know, when we had Bruce Feldman on in one of the opening shows this year, he talked about how, you know, Harrison is going to test off the charts. Not, you know, he's going to run a fast 40, and he's been working on a short shuttle. He's been working on his 3-cone, which I think is something that quickness in and out of routes.
Yep.
But he's a big imposing target. teams have to focus on him. When you get that type of guy, look at Garrett Wilson with the Jets, you know, when they're able to get the ball to him, when you've got that big receiver that can dominate the game and you got to shade your safety over, you got to make sure that he's got one man on him and another guy watching him. It opens things up for the rest of the offense. That's what Marvin Harrison does. Brock Bowers, again, go back to what Bruce Feldman told us. I mean, he's going to be an outstanding athlete, could run under 4.5 if he comes to the combine at 230 pounds. And as I said, he is basically a receiver in a tight end's body. He's a guy who gets down the field. He'll win out for the contested throw in a crowd. He's able to beat the safeties down the field, linebackers down the field. And he's not a bad blocker, especially in motion. He's actually a very good blocker in motion. They don't use him in line all that much. But when they do, I mean, he gets passable results. But, I mean, you don't want to use Brock Bowers as an inline blocker unless it's absolutely necessary and take him away from what he's so outstanding at, getting down the field and making the reception, which is what teams want these days in the NFL at the tight end position.
Next two guys, again, Drake May was at 4, at 5 and 6, Tony. One guy we've talked about going back to last year, Olu Fashanu, the offensive tackle out of Penn State, their left tackle. And then Chubb Robinson, someone we talked about on the last show too, who just has every tool imaginable as a pass rusher.
I'm either going to look like a genius with Chubb Robinson, or I'm going to look like a moron, because I don't know any other people have Chubb Robinson graded as high as I do. But you watch this kid, watch him last week against Iowa. He's all over the field. He's an impact player. He's not just an edge rusher. He's not just a wide angle rusher. He's a guy that's got an inside move. He plays with great technique, breaks down well. He's athletic. He gets out into space. You can stand him over tackle. You can have him come out of a three-point stance. And the fact that he's practicing against Fashanu day in and day out, as well as the rest of that Penn State offensive line, which I hope we get to talk about later on, yep, it's just making him a much, much better player.
All right, let's go to number 7 now. By far the best name in the draft, Tony. Kool-Aid McKinstry, the cornerback out of Alabama. I know they've been a little disappointing this year, but you have not been disappointed in him.
You can't be. I mean, he is cool, without a doubt. I mean, he is a shutdown corner. And again, he's one of those guys that I came into the season, okay, let's see, because there's usually all hype. After the quarterback position, you see all this hype on the cornerbacks, and he's really answered the call. I thought he's played very well. Teams don't challenge him that much, and when they have, he shut them down, or he's made good plays. He's also an outstanding punt returner. So, again, you know, you talk about priority positions. Everybody wants to focus, you know, on the quarterback. But left tackle and cornerback are also priority positions come NFL draft. And right now, McKinstry is far and away my number one cornerback on the board.
You had Shedeur Sanders at number 8. Joe Alt, the left tackle from Notre Dame. We talked about him, I think, on our first summer show, Tony, looking ahead, even going back to our, you know, look ahead draft show back in the last May. And, you know, I had watched it. I'm like, hey, you know, he doesn't move that well, but he's so big and powerful, but boy, he's played great so far this year.
Technically sound. Again, you know, the tackle position is all as much as it is physical. It's also intellectual. You have to know how to use body positioning and angles to shut down the opponents, to shut down the edge rushers, how to use your hands. He does it all incredibly well. Really, after Sanders, there's a bit of a drop-off on my board. So this is where you get into the second tier of those, you know, top 15 picks. And again, Alt is a really good left tackle. Will he be a left tackle in the NFL? My view is, you leave him at left tackle until he proves he can't play at left tackle, and you move him to right tackle. But you're right, and we've seen that sort of lineman come out of Notre Dame in the past and have success.
Yeah, and look, we'll talk about what that offensive line did against Ohio State too in a little bit. They did a heck of a job this week too. I'm with you. All right, finally, number 10, another Buckeye on the list, and it's another wide receiver. They're basically wide receiver U at this point with all the guys they develop, and Emeka Egbuka. Tony, I watched him over the summer and I'm like, all right, he looks like a good player, you know, solid wide receiver, maybe second round pick. But boy, he has taken his game to another level this year, in my opinion. And he just looks like wide receiver that's been coached extremely well. Like, he does everything well. He has good hands. He's a really good route runner. He's quick out of his breaks at the top of the route. And he's going to be a really, really safe first round pick for somebody this year.
You know, you look at a couple of years ago when the Jets took Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave was taken right after him, and a lot of it was kind of written off. It's sort of a different situation in a sense that, you know, everyone's focusing on Marvin Harrison Jr. at Ohio State, and that leaves opportunities open for Ibuka, and he's taken advantage of those opportunities the past 2 years, made some important, you know, game-impacting receptions against Notre Dame. He's got nice length. I don't think he's super fast, but he's fast enough.
Yep.
Always comes through for that team with a variety of quarterbacks. I had him graded as a first-rounder coming into the summer, as a late first-rounder. When I look at the board right now, I think he is a probably top 15 pick. But again, the board kind of drops off after Saunders for me. It was Ibuka, maybe Jatavion Sanders out of Texas, who I like a lot, Quinn Ewers of Texas, but I think Ibuka fits there at number 10. And when you look at, I got to just say, when you look at my overall top 10, where the past 2 years it was defensive heavy and you had a lot of defensive prospects, it's the opposite this year. It's primarily all offensive players at this point in time, except for two guys. And the other thing that stands out to me is no seniors. I mean, it's all underclassmen, and that's the end result of, you know, underclassmen coming out and, you know, watering down the senior class.
And Tony, last thing on the top 10, because I really think this is true. You know, we've struggled the last 2 years, I think, to find a large number of what we would consider blue chip prospects at the top of these classes.
Yeah.
Caleb Williams, blue chip. Marvin Harrison, blue chip. Brock Bowers, blue chip. Fashanu, blue chip. Drake May, blue chip. There are some real high quality prospects that would be, you know, top five picks in most drafts in this year's class, at least early on.
Yeah, and I do think that Chop Robinson and McKistry and Sanders can also, if they continue to play well, elevate into that. Yeah, you know, these are the guys that you would take top five in any draft.
100%. All right, let's go over some of these games, Tony. We just talked about Notre Dame and Ohio State players. Hell of a game on Saturday night, man. And that I felt like I was watching 90s college football again. Teams are just running the ball. They're pounding it. This wasn't, you know, spread, read option, you know, RPO stuff. This was old school football. And quite frankly, even though Notre Dame lost the game in dramatic fashion with having 10 men on the field for two straight plays into the game, which is... this isn't a college football show, but my God, you could spend 30 minutes on that. Boy, the job they're fronted against a very good Ohio State front that has multiple, like four or five guys that'll go on day one or two of this draft, more likely than not. They did a heck of a job just running it right down Ohio State's throat.
I thought that this could be, you know, a statement game for Sam Hartman, who went from Wake Forest to Notre Dame. I thought this was going to be the kind of game where he just stood out and, you know, wasn't going to be a first round pick, but was a guy who was going to go establish himself as a day two pick, which I still think he is.
And by the way, he was fine. He wasn't great, but he was fine.
And what happened was he was okay. And then Notre Dame found something that worked. And to their coach's credit, they stayed with that. Like you said, they just basically beat the Ohio State defensive line up front, and they just, Ohio State couldn't stop him. And Hartman, to his credit, did a good job managing the game from that point on. I think that the Ohio State defensive line is a little bit smaller. It's always a little bit smaller. I mean, they go with those quick one-gap type of guys rather than the big-bodied gap occupiers. And that's what Notre Dame was able to take advantage of. I thought, you know, a couple of guys who stood out for me, I thought Ransom and Proctor, the safeties for Ohio State, played very well. Obviously, Javonte Jean-Baptiste, the Ohio State transfer, the edge rusher, had a chip on his shoulder playing for Notre Dame, wanted to show something to his prior team. He's considered a late-round pick. I thought he did very well. Obviously, you know, Notre Dame has a star in the making. We're talking about Travis Hunter before. They have a star in the making in Benjamin Morrison, their sophomore or cornerback, who looks like he's going to be a big-time player. It was an enjoyable game. I mean, really – the one player who didn't impress me all that much was the Ohio State quarterback, McLeod. I mean, if he was more accurate, I think Ohio State would have won that game by a lot. But, and when I say accurate, you know, he's not throwing receivers free. He's not putting the ball in front of receivers and letting them run to the pass. And what happened was there was a lot, even that catch by Ibuka late. I mean, if he puts it in front of him, Ibuka's probably in the end zone. What happens is they adjust backwards and it leads to a loss of opportunity running after the catch.
Does this at all, and by the way, to his credit, he actually did have a nice last drive to drive Ohio State down in that game, so you got to tip your cap for that. But you're right, before that, I mean, just look at the point total, right? It was just inconsistent quarterback play. Ibuka and Marvin Harrison Jr., we all had to hold our breath when Marvin Harrison Jr. had that injury, and you're like, oh, boy. But He came back into the game. It looks like he's going to be okay.
The other guy to keep an eye on Ohio State is Cade Stover, the tight end, because
he was on my list.
Yeah, he was. He considered he was about to enter the draft last year, and then he had a back injury and a hip injury. excuse me, in that semifinal game. He's very consistent. You know, he doesn't look like a fast guy on the field. He looks like a 4.7 guy. But I'm told that Cade Stover, when it comes combine time, is going to test through the roof. He's going to run in the 4.5s at 240 pounds. Wow. He's a nasty tight end. It's a matter of coaching him to play to that speed. And we can talk about the Ohio State coaching. Look how good C.J. Stroud is doing, if you remember my remarks on C.J. Stroud a year ago. So keep an eye on Cade Stover, who did very well. I was not too impressed with the Ohio State offensive line. You know, Donovan Jackson and Matthew Jones. Jackson is a guy, I have him as a second-round pick right now. Some people think he can sneak into the first round. I didn't see a guy who was, all played very well. I didn't see Donovan Jackson playing first-round football, if you will, against Notre Dame.
Do you give a hit to any of these Ohio State front players for their inability to stop Notre Dame's run games? The Sawyers, the Eichenbergs, Tuamalo, Hall, any of those guys that, you looked and you were a little disappointed or
you have to. I mean, Tuamalo made some decent plays rushing the passer. He knocked away a ball. He made it was two consecutive plays. He knocked away the ball. He almost intercepted a pass. Mm-hmm. But Michael Hall Jr., I mean, he was, didn't really hear his name all night. And Eichenberg was another one. You expect Eichenberg, when they're running the ball, Eichenberg's forte is he stacks well against the run. He's a terrific run defender. And he was making a lot of plays after the fact. You have to. And credit to the Notre Dame coaches because they found what was working and they stuck with it.
All right, let's jump to another game, Tony. Florida State and Clemson. Wondering what stood out to you in that game. Obviously, Florida State walking away with a big-time win.
I think the Florida State defense. Florida State is going back. It looks like the Bobby Bowden type of defense where they are a punch in the mouth. Get up off the field, play hard. Shaheen Brown had a lot of nice plays. Tatum Bethune, the middle linebacker, nobody talks about him. Central Florida transfer, he's all over the field. Brandon Fisk, the transfer from Western Michigan, made playing high-intensity football. Those are guys who are late-round, undrafted free agent types of guys. I thought Jared Verse played very well. They had a difficult time stopping him. The Florida State defense just really, really impressed me, as did the Seminole receivers. I mean, you look at Johnny Wilson, you look at Keon Coleman. I mean, these are two bigger receivers who get up and compete to make the reception. They went out for the contested throws. They're not the fastest guy in the world. Johnny Wilson right now is on my tight end board. He's not on my receiver board.
He's 6'7", by the way, for the fans that don't know him.
235 pounds as well. Yeah. But these are guys who use their size as a major advantage. I thought that the quarterback, Jordan Travis, played relatively well, but he's more of a RPO scattered and throws the ball all around the field, and the receivers got to go up and come down with the ball. And that's exactly what the two Florida State receivers did. Clemson, I thought, had plenty of opportunities to win the game, made some bad choices, missed the field goal, and that basically sealed their own doom.
Yeah, I just want to throw some more flowers towards Keon Coleman, who I think is going to be a first-round pick this year. He's big, 6'4". He's can run. He creates separation. The contested catch stuff is excellent, Tony. If he tests really well, and I think we're seeing it with Jaden Reed too, right? Who was having a nice start to his NFL career. Right. That Michigan State offense last year was just a mess. That's where he transferred from, Keon Coleman. And I think you're seeing with a better quarterback and a better offensive program what he can do.
He's going to have to test very well. And somebody asked me about this. Somebody took me to task on this on Twitter because I posted my receiver rankings. And I had Coleman rated much lower. And I compared it to Nacua, the kid out of BYU who's played great the first three games of the year. Yep. In the sense that bigger receivers who can't, run in the low 4.4s, they're just not a high priority. There's not a lot of attractiveness to take them early in the NFL draft. Doesn't mean they're not going to be good NFL players, but they're looking for those low 4.4, high 4.3 guys, or the guys who can run scissor sharp routes. We'll see if Coleman can do that. Buddy's a real good football player. Yeah, I got to say, from the Clemson side, I was a bit disappointed in Barrett Carter. I like him a lot. That slightly undersized, more instinctive version of Trent Simpson. Didn't see him making too many plays. Tyler Davis had a lot of tackles, but he didn't make a lot of impact plays. And that Florida State offensive line is good. They're not great. And I would have thought that the Clemson defensive front seven really would have handled them, but they didn't.
All right, let's go Texas Baylor, Tony. Texas blew out the Bears 38-6 in that game. We've talked a lot about some of these Texas prospects, but what did you want to add from there?
Well, I mean, Texas has established themselves as one of the best teams in the country. This was a game where against Baylor, you know, you thought maybe Texas would slide a little bit, but no. Quinn Ewers had a good game. Jatavion Sanders is an outstanding pass catcher. Adonai Mitchell had another game. And I guess the bigger story here is, you know, how bad Baylor has looked. Especially, you know, this is the second year in a row. You expect better things from Baylor. They usually have a good defense. I mean, a lot of those guys didn't even show up. It was surprising to me. I was glad for Texas because in preseason, I had them ranked very highly because of the NFL talent they had. And I'm surprised how, you know, non-existent Baylor was. Gabe Hall, who was well thought of in some areas of the scouting community. I think he had one tackle and one pass defense. He was non-existent throughout the game against a decent Texas offensive line. But Hall is somebody that people think could be a top 60 pick, and he really didn't show up.
Yeah, Texas, Quinn Ewers, 293 passing yards, a touchdown. Brooks, the running back, 106 yards, a couple touchdowns. Sanders, your tight end you love so much, 5 for 110. So Texas just keeps stacking wins and stacking impressive performances, Tony. They've done a really good job recruiting down there, and they got a very talented team.
And more than anything else, the coach is making right decisions because it's been an issue with coaching in the past. It seems Sarkisian has found the right formula.
You don't see many teams blow out Iowa the way Penn State did, especially scoring that many points on what's always a very well-coached Iowa team. Now we know Iowa has issues on offense, but to shut them out is still a really nice job by Penn State with that huge victory.
And I want to talk about the Penn State offensive line because everyone talks about Fisciano as well they should because Fisciano is going to be a very early pick. But Penn State has got four guys on that offensive line who I think are going to be selected at some point in the draft. If they're not selected in the draft, they're going to be priority free agents. You look at the right tackle, Caden Wallace. I mean, he was dominating the Iowa defenders all night. And Iowa's got a decent defensive line. Caden Wallace, I think, is going to be a very good early day three pick. Sal Wormley, the big guard, another late-round choice. Hunter Nazard, the former, I believe he came from Cornell, went to Penn State, played last year as a senior, returned for a second senior season. I mean, it's not just Fasanu on that offensive line for Penn State. They've got some outstanding, not only college blockers, but guys who project well to the next level. And then there's the defense that, I mean, in my opinion, right now, Penn State's the best team in the Big Ten. I think Penn State would beat Michigan. I think that if Ohio State can't build off of the win against Notre Dame, they're going to handle Ohio State. I think the quarterback's playing well. He's not playing great, but, you know, he's playing well enough. And that defense is outstanding. I mean, you saw Chop Robinson all over the field, number 44. Even if he wasn't making the play, he was around the play. They've got so many good players on that defensive side of the ball. But no one talks about the total offensive line, and that offensive line is outstanding for Penn State.
Yeah, Penn State has Ohio State on October 21st, and then they have Michigan on November 11th. So two big games to circle on the calendar for three of the most talented teams in college football in terms of draft prospects. Oregon State, Washington State, Tony. Not a game I expected to be on the list of games you wanted to hit this week, but here we are.
Yeah, I mean, two teams that are going to be looking for a home real soon because, you know, they got left out in all the college football realignment. I mean, in my opinion, this was a coming out game for Cameron Ward. If you watch the game, Cameron Ward basically took the game by the collar and just basically pummeled Oregon State. The score was 38-35. But it really wasn't that close because Oregon State needed a furious comeback to basically get back into the game. But it was Cameron Ward, over 400 yards of passing, four touchdowns, protected the football, an athletic guy. The thing about Cameron Ward is he's got all the physical skills. He's got a live arm. He drives the ball downfield. You know, he can get outside the pocket and get the ball downfield with a flick of his wrist. He's got enough foot speed to make plays with his legs. The accuracy is an issue because he used to scatter the ball all around the place. I'm seeing improvement in the accuracy. And when you have a game like that, where you basically just pounded your opponent into the ground early on. And like I said, the score was not as indicative of the game because Oregon State needed a furious comeback. I think they scored 21 points in the final quarter to come back. But I really like what I saw from Cameron Ward in that game. In my opinion, that was the coming of age for Cameron Ward. I think he's shown a lot of improvement in his game.
Absolutely. All right, finally, Arkansas-LSU, Tony. SEC matchup there. What you like?
You know, we talked about Neighbors, the wide receiver, a couple of weeks ago. And I said that I thought that his future was basically connected to the quarterback, Jaden Daniels. Jaden Daniels has played really well the past couple of weeks when they pounded Mississippi State, played well this week. And as a result, we're seeing Neighbors play off the charts. I think he had over 200 yards receiving against Mississippi State, another 130 yards this week against Arkansas. That's got a good defensive secondary, 8 receptions. So I think you're seeing Jaden Daniels starting to play as well as he did at the end of the 2022 season, which is going to help his draft stock. And Malik Neighbors, who I'm told will enter the NFL draft, is going to start to establish himself in that second tier of receivers eligible or available in the 2024 NFL draft.
Tony, good stuff, my friend. We'll talk to you next week, bud.
Look forward to it, John.
For Tony Pauline from Sports Kita, I am John Schmuck. We will see you next time for another episode of Draft Season.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.